jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. There are two ways that killing a person is deemed lawful. The first is justifiable homicide. This pertains to matters of self-defense. No one is claiming Samantha Hall was protecting herself when Troy Singer died, so justifiable homicide is out. The second way a killing can be deemed lawful is called excusable homicide. There are three ways to define excusable homicide. If the criteria for Samantha Hall matches any one of the following 3 points, the homicide is excusable.
Number one. When the killing is committed by accident and misfortune in doing any lawful act by lawful means with usual ordinary caution and without any unlawful intent. Or, number two, when the killing occurs by accident and misfortune in the heat of passion upon any sudden and sufficient provocation. Or, number three, when the killing is committed by accident and misfortune resulting from a sudden combat, if a dangerous weapon is not used and the killing is not done in a cruel or unusual manner.
So, to recap, 1. Accident while being cautious. 2. Heat of passion. 3. Combat.
Okay, so by process of elimination, just so that hopefully we can all get to being on the same place for some of this stuff, I think we can all agree that we can rule out number 3 immediately, right? Because there's no
combat.
There's no combat.
And then I think number 2 is out because there was no heat of passion because she wasn't there.
Right. No, but I do think that number 1 applies. It was an accident.
Yeah.
And it was out of her... It was out of her hands, literally. It was an accident and unforeseen.
Okay, but look at the letter of what it says. It says, usual, ordinary caution. So even if we debate intent, we've seen enough that says, and we talked about this before, it doesn't seem like she used usual, ordinary caution. She wasn't even there.
Well, but usual, ordinary caution is what she used for years while she was asphyxiating him in erotic situations.
But we're not talking about
this specific case. With the knot that she tied and with her not being there, I think we cannot say it was usual, ordinary caution.
Well, we don't know what knot she tied. Again, we don't have the knot to look at. But I will say also with that, with number one, we don't know if there was unlawful intent. It says that you need to have unlawful intent to be guilty. And I don't see any motive for her.
Okay. We've seen a lot that can paint to motive, whether you say that she was deliberately murdering him is one thing, but I think you could also make a strong argument that she did not put a lot of effort into making sure that it was safe.
She did. I mean, she...
She wasn't even there, and she knew that he was drinking.
I think Carl is trying to say, if I may, is that you're making the argument that she didn't provide a safe enough environment or enough safety protocols in order for this to be safe.
Exactly.
It's a really,
especially as an expert.
Exactly.
This is a really hard scenario to determine what, in this circumstance, would be considered usual, ordinary caution.
Because nothing about this is
exactly.
Usual.
So within BDSM, what is usual, ordinary caution?
Yeah. I'd argue that providing a slip release is usual, ordinary caution.
But if she mistied the knot, is she then responsible for his death?
Yes. And okay, so since you brought that up,
I'm curious. Do you believe that? If she mistied the knot, is she then responsible for his death? And should she
but
be
right
punished
now we're
for
discussing
it?
The we're criteria discussing... for first degree murder.
Okay, yeah, okay, so just because that's kind of where we're at, could you, Mason, could you read through or tell us what the specific criteria for a murder charge is?
Sure, yeah, I'm gonna read it. So to prove the charge of first degree murder, the state must prove the following three elements beyond a reasonable doubt. So it has to prove all three of these things.
Okay.
Number one, that Troy Singer is dead.
Yes,
that's
undisputed.
True. Yes.
Number two, that the death was caused by a criminal act of Samantha Hall. Now, an act includes a series of related actions arising from and performed pursuant to a single design or purpose.
Okay.
So that's already one. Getting tricky.
Yeah.
That's where we're conflicted.
Well, I think her purpose was, as she, if we look at what she said her purpose was in that message that she sent to him, she said, this isn't for you, this is for me. So according to this, arising from and performed pursuant to a single design or purpose, according to her own words in that text, the single design or purpose was she wanted to him to strangle. She wanted the marks on his neck. She wanted to see the blood in his eyes. Yeah. She said that was her purpose for him putting the noose around his neck.
She didn't say the purpose was for him to die.
Yeah, she said the purpose. She said the if you're going by that text.
Yeah, yeah, the brink of unconsciousness is what she said.
Okay, but say that we don't include that she did it specifically so he would die. You still have to admit that then the purpose is for him to put the noose around his neck and strangle himself to close to the point of death, however she mm-hmm. framed it. So that still shows that her intent was for him to put that noose around his neck. She put him in that situation. She tied the knot. The goal was, her purpose was for him to hang himself till almost dead, even if you don't think she did it to murder him. So it still puts the intent and the purpose on her.
I think I agree with you there, yeah. Carl.
I would agree too. if it said caused by the act of Samantha Hall, but because it says caused by the criminal act of Samantha Hall.
But that includes criminal negligence, right?
Can we prove that those desires and those actions are criminal if they don't have criminal intent? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what we're trying to decide is, you know, was her intent for him to die, or was her intent just for him to go to the brink of unconsciousness and then release himself?
Well, let's move on to point number three. This is the third thing that has to be true to convict her of first degree murder. And that's the third thing is that there was a predetermined killing.
Premeditated.
That there was a premeditated killing of Troy Singer. So killing with premeditation is killing after consciously deciding to do so. The decision must be present in the mind at the time of the killing. The law does not fix the exact period of time that must pass between the formation of the premeditation intent to kill and the killing itself. The period of time must be long enough to allow reflection by the defendant. The premeditated intent to kill must be formed before the killing. The question of premeditation is a question of fact to be determined by you from the evidence. It will be the sufficient proof of premeditation if the circumstances of the killing and the conduct of the accused convince you beyond a reasonable doubt of the existence of premeditation at the time of the killing.
Circumstantial evidence has a bad reputation. People think it's not the most reliable kind of evidence, but that isn't fair. The only difference between circumstantial and direct evidence is that circumstantial evidence requires an inference, and direct evidence doesn't. Let's say you're a kindergarten teacher. You have a candy bar on your desk, and it goes missing. There are orange finger smudges all over your desk, and you know little Jake is always eating Cheetos. Jake's sandals match the tread marks in the carpet by your desk, and there's chocolate all around Jake's mouth. So you go to Jake and you accuse him. And he says, "Oh no, it wasn't me. It was someone else. It was Maddie over there. I saw him do it." The smudges, the tread, the stained mouth, everything pointing towards Jake is circumstantial evidence. But the evidence pointing to Maddie is direct evidence. Jake told you that Maddie is the perpetrator. No inference required. Which do you think is more reliable? I want you to let go of any stigma you have about circumstantial evidence. If circumstantial evidence wasn't valid and worthy of your consideration, it would not be allowed in this courtroom. Inferences can and should be made when weighing facts. That's why we have jury trials. So, let's talk about motive.
Samantha's FetFinder activity did more than provide fodder for story-hungry media cycles. It provided the state with a theory.
Can you please read the highlighted portion you wrote to Samantha Hall on August 5th, 2015?
Okay. I wrote, "Mistress, today I thought of you at work. A woman came in for a meeting and she had curves that looked like yours. I'd do anything to serve you. Your future slave."
That's Jeffrey Main, a FetFinder user who went by the screen name Don't Go Lightly. Yes, he's being subpoenaed. Yes, this is awkward for everyone.
And can you read her response for the court, please?
She wrote, "I would wipe the floor with you, darling."
These types of flirtatious messages were not foreign to Samantha Hall. While always maintaining a professionally conservative exterior, online she was provocative. Since opening her FetFinder account in 2011 and throughout her relationship with Troy, she maintained a series of flirtatious correspondences with men who dreamed of becoming her submissives. Troy Singer was one of these men in 2012, but their relationship grew deeper. According to Samantha, Troy is the only man she pursued offline. However, through the anonymity of FetFinder, she maintained a stream of conversations with her hopeful followers. Samantha described FetFinder as a place to flirt, have fun, and blow off steam. She liked the attention her profile attracted. However, beginning 8 months before Troy's death, observation of FetLife user Don't Go Lightly might have progressed from harmless flirtation to intended tryst.
Okay, so now we're looking at the exhibits, which are the correspondence on FetFinder between Jeffrey Main, a.k.a. Don't Go Lightly, and Samantha. So exhibit 88, Mistress S. "No, you don't want me to tie you up because I'd leave you that way for fun."
All right, and then on 12/11/2015, she wrote to him, "I might let you massage every inch of me with coconut oil, but if you stopped or got excited, you'd be out the door."
And then on exhibit 90, dated 12/24/2015, she said, "When I get my hands on you, you won't like it."
And then exhibit 91, 2/2/2016, Mistress S., "I can't wait to knock that eager grin off your face."
Exhibit 92, from February 6th, 2016, Mistress S., "I'm going to push you and push you until you don't know whether you're begging me to stop or begging me for more."
Police were unable to find evidence the couple ever met in person, a fact supported by Don't Go Lightly's own testimony. However, the state argued that these escalating flirtations were indicative of Samantha's dwindling affection for Troy and an eagerness to replace him.
I think they're just flirtations. I think it was just, you know, an outlet.
How can you say that?
Well, they said they didn't meet.
Given everything else that we've seen about her and their relationship, you can't just look at these by themselves. You have
Why
to look
would
at
someone
these
lie
everything else.
Under oath? You're saying that Mr. Main is lying under oath? Are we going to put him on trial next?
No, I'm not saying that. You, it just seems like you're dismissing these as innocent flirtations back and forth. But I think if you look at her pattern of behavior towards Troy, who she's supposed to be in this loving, committed relationship, the fact that she's sending these messages anonymously on the site, I think, is a really a reflection on her character. Wouldn't you say?
Was it anonymously?
How do we know? Troy may have known and been okay with it. He's into being abused, as you like to say, so maybe this was another thing.
That's a pretty big assumption. Or presumption on your part there. I think we have to look at...
We already know he liked being whipped. He liked being demeaned. He liked being talked down to. Why wouldn't this be another turn on for him?
I think instead of talking about what we don't know, let's talk about what we do know. What we do know is that when she called the police, there was no emotion in her voice. She left him there by himself in a situation where he could easily die. She didn't seem concerned or upset about that, even after she knew he might be dead. You couple that with You couple that with these messages talking to other men. One of the messages she sent on Christmas Eve. Does that sound like someone I know? If I found out that my wife was sending messages to some other guy on Christmas Eve.
Stop highlighting Christmas Eve. Like that's the time.
I was at a bar on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm just saying.
I think the majority of the world doesn't acknowledge Christmas Eve.
There is no significance to Christmas Eve.
No, that's not true. But also,
I'm Catholic. I
acknowledge Christmas Eve.
Right. You'd think her priority would be spending time with loved ones and family, but it's not. It's messaging these guys through the site that are not him. I think it just shows a pattern of. Whatever her interest was in him, it does not seem to be as part of a loving relationship.
Or is this just part of the whole way that she gets off on power?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they are super short messages.
It could be that, too. It could be about power.
So
but that's
if it
also
is
important.
About power, then that's inconsequential to mm-hmm. our case.
No, because if she gets off on power, it's another comment on that the relationship wasn't about him. It was about her
but
and about making her
arguing.
Happy.
We're not arguing who the relationship was for. We're trying to discover in these messages, we're trying to determine, you know, was there an actual potential for another relationship or was she just flirting?
Do you remember what they said?
Or exercising her power.
If she had all this power in the relationship, she could have left at any time to go meet this man. And they both testify that they didn't.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't she?
She could have had him do things and take pictures of himself for her own power trip or whatever. Yeah. And she didn't
She didn't need that from him. She had Troy to do all that stuff.
Exactly. Why would she get rid of Troy? We're back to the same. I think
because
that this is
Troy's,
a distraction
I think
from
that was
Lowardy
Troy's purpose.
To make us think that she wanted Mr. Main over Troy. I think it's a distraction, and I don't think it's pertinent to the case.
Do you remember what they said about circumstantial evidence?
Of course.
That all these pieces together help to make a definitive case to something that happened. And I think if you look at these texts as part of the larger puzzle, they fit. It's not like these don't fit with her pattern of behavior. Could we all agree with that?
I disagree, actually, because if she's a dominatrix and she has all the power in the relationship and she can make him stand in a closet for 5.5 hours, then she could obviously go meet with another man and have sex with him or do whatever she wants. And so this actually betrays the characterization that the prosecution has painted to us so far.
But it's not about sex. They've talked about that a million times, that this is about power,
right, but if she wasn't getting what she wanted from Troy, then it would seem that she would need to find that with someone else. And over this 4-month period, she never decided she had to go find another man to get what it was she was or was not getting from Troy. She never met with him.
Right, because Troy gave her what she wanted. She wanted a guy who was, you know, I already said all this before. She wanted a guy who was willing to push his limits, that liked to be bound up, and that listened to everything she said without questioning it, and he filled that. So she doesn't need another one of those. She's got that.
But then that just invalidates the argument. If she's getting everything from Troy, then she doesn't need anything.
No, she's getting that from Troy. It doesn't mean that she's in a loving relationship with Troy. Maybe she wanted to talk to somebody else. Like, why? What's the point of even texting with the other guys then? But regardless of that, it shows her character. We've seen this over and over again. This is a comment on what kind of a person that she is.
Yeah. Carl, you think that she willfully murdered Troy. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. If we take the kink out of this case, then the equivalent would be a woman shoots her boyfriend and we're gonna hold a Facebook conversation as proof that she was mm-hmm. wanted to have an affair or something like that. Like I don't understand how in her world this is innocent banter. It sounds weird to us maybe, but how can we make that correlation?
I don't totally agree with the analogy. I think I understand the point that you're trying to make. I'm just saying that I think if you look at all the things that we've seen from her thus far, especially the phone call to the police, the tone of her voice, the awful things that she made him do, and then stuff like this, it just shows to me it's a pattern of sociopathic behavior. She just does not seem like an empathetic, caring person to me.
Right.
Jan, would you
totally
agree with that?
Agree, Carl.
But I also think it shows, like, because Jeffrey was engaging in these conversations, which to me shows that there are people it's not just Troy. Other people wanted to be in this submissive role with her.
Right.
And so that makes me feel like it's not as, you know, fantastical as we might think it is, because it's not just Troy. There's all these other guys she's messaging with who want to be involved in this relationship.
Troy is dead.
Right. But if we keep trying to judge the dom submissive relationship based on their relationship, then I think that this shows that there are other people who enjoy that type of relationship. And that again brings up the issue of consent.
And we don't know if Troy knew about these other flirtations. He may be into it as well. Yeah. We don't know that. That's an inference you're
something
making.
We can't.
But I just don't think that these prove intent to kill.
Hi, this is Chelsea speaking. I was recently at a podcast convention and ran into Brooke Gittings, the host of amazing podcasts Convicted and Actual Innocence. She was wearing this really striking A-line dress covered in newspaper print headlines and articles. I'd never seen anything like it. It captured her true crime, newsworthy spirit, and I immediately coveted it. I asked her where she found it, and she told me ModCloth, which made me laugh because I've recently gone down the ModCloth rabbit hole myself, and so far I haven't come back up. ModCloth has contemporary apparel, classic silhouettes, and statement prints. I think that's what Brooke's dress would fall under the category of. But they also have retro items for people like me. For example, I love 1960s fashions, and I haven't been able to find 1960s booties anywhere besides thrift stores. Until the last 2 weeks, when I went on to ModCloth, and they have a ton of them, some of which are en route to me right now. I also like the way they present their apparel online. Not everything is modeled by women who are 2X small. They have those sizes and those models, and they look great. But ModCloth also goes up to 4X large, and those models and designs are displayed just as often with just as much style. And the whole site is great. It's body positive, it's unique, they have a team of mod stylists that will help style you for free. It's a great site, and I'm thrilled to say if you go to modcloth.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS at checkout, you will get 30% off any order $100 or more. Again, that's modcloth.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS. Back to the show. The investigators found a number of personal items documenting Troy's inextinguishable love for Samantha, including this Valentine's card dated 2.5 months before Troy's death. Samantha had been using it as a bookmark.
Could you read the handwritten message, please?
No matter how tense things are or become, you're my lover, my friend, my mistress, my soulmate. I'll never stop serving you.
Detective, did you have opportunity to interview Mr. Singer's estate planning lawyer?
Yes.
And when did Mr. Singer last update his will?
I believe it was the first time he'd made a will, and that was signed in June of 2014.
Was Samantha Hall provided for in Mr. Singer's will?
Yes.
To what effect?
Upon Mr. Singer's death, Samantha Hall was to receive the house in which they lived and $40,000. His life insurance and the rest of his assets were to be divided between his mother and sister.
How much equity did Troy Singer have in his house at the time he died?
$233,320.
And is the house valued higher than it was in 2009 when Troy purchased it?
Yes. It's worth $700,000 today. He purchased it for $650,000.
So, doing the math, if Samantha sold the house today, she would walk away with a gain of $283,320.
Assuming she sold the house at market value, yes.
Plus the $40,000 cash Troy left her, which would raise her gain following Troy's death to $323,320.
Your Honor, I think the jury can do the math for themselves.
Is that an objection?
Counsel is testifying.
Overruled.
When he got his turn, Samantha's defense attorney, Mr. Cortez, argued that Samantha had no need to kill Troy for his money. She was in no debt, took terrific pride in her own earnings, and even if she had wanted to get her hands on Troy's wealth, she had other means of doing so.
Mr. Kroger, what is financial domination?
Financial domination is a fetish lifestyle, an expensive one. Usually taking place between a male submissive and female dominant. The sub will give cash, gifts, material goods, pay bills, etc. to his dom as a form of submission to her.
So the sub serves his dominant by giving her his money.
That's right.
How is that not extortion?
Well, because it's consensual. A financial sub, sometimes called a money slave or cash piggy, receives pleasure from servicing his mistress that way. He enjoys giving her his money.
I see. When you were analyzing Samantha Hall's and Troy Singer's relationship, was financial domination something you considered?
That was something I looked for. I reviewed their financial statements, lines of credit, retirement funds, and I concluded that there was no financial domination at play. That was not part of their practice.
How could you tell?
They appeared to have separate finances. No joint accounts. She paid for half of the household utilities. That's definitely not something I would see with a couple practicing financial domination.
Mr. Kroger, given your level of familiarity with DS relationships, do you think it would have been hard for Samantha to have received Troy's money just by asking for it?
Objection. Speculative.
Mr. Kroger, in your analysis, did you ever notice a time when Samantha Hall asked for or demanded something of Troy Singer that she did not receive?
No, I did not.
There's no financial motive in this. I mean, it's obvious she was a successful woman. She had no debts. They split everything in half. They had separate accounts. I feel like if we're looking for a motive, that's definitely not it.
I completely agree. This part of the trial felt silly to me.
Yeah.
I feel like they're just throwing stuff against the wall, trying to get something to stick. I mean, first they bring up it's another man, and now they're bringing up the money.
But there was an email. They mentioned it in court between Sam and Troy that the inheritance about the house and the $40,000. I mean, how is that not a motive?
Well, but
Carl, you
she's already
with
living
you?
In the house.
She's living in the house. They're practically married.
Yeah,
but
it was his.
Well, actually,
but that's his choice.
I mean, yes, his net gain was something like $323,000. I think. However,
that's what she would get from his.
Right. Yeah.
Death.
Sorry. But I don't think that had anything to do with it. Honestly, yeah. I think that she did it because she's a psychopath and had a murder fantasy.
Well,
I don't think the finances had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I think it was a dumb argument by the prosecutor and yeah. I'm
don't
buy
sure
it.
Why they brought it up.
No.
Really.
Janet, okay. Do you agree?
Not completely. No, I'm a little on the fence there.
Well, what's your argument?
It's not millions of dollars, but it's still a lot of money because it was his house, right? They weren't married. I know it was like they were married, but they weren't married. So
you feel like she would have killed him just to get that money?
I don't know. She would have.
But maybe it played a factor. Yeah. It is
right.
It was a little concerning that she was even in his will.
Right.
He called her his soulmate in a direct message right. to her in the Valentine's
but
card.
Like we've brought
she
up,
dominated everything of
but
his
that's
life.
Right. So. But I think that's the whole, that's what refutes this argument is that she could get anything she wanted from him. So I think if she had asked him for all his money at any time, he would have given it to her. I don't think she would have had to kill him.
Well,
he
did give it to her.
Exactly.
Or she could have made him change in that email chain. She could have responded and said, no, you said everything to me, nothing to your mother and your sister. But she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe she didn't have to. And, you know, again, this is aside from the point because I don't think that's why she killed him.
Yeah.
But I just think that she didn't necessarily have to specifically say, give me all your money. He ended up giving her all his money, but that's the way the relationship
yeah,
worked.
Yeah, with all due respect to Janet and your feelings about this, I'd like to move on and talk about something that's
probably
pertinent.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Yeah.
The state's argument for premeditation was threefold. Two we've heard. The first was alienation of affection. The second was financial gain. Both are common motives in murders between lovers. The third, however, was so sensational and disturbing it framed the portrait of Samantha's days at trial. While contested procedurally in the courtroom, the details were splashed and dissected with relish in tabloids and late-night news segments.
Breaking news in the trial of Samantha Hall. The state has finally admitted what we knew all along. Troy Singer died in a lust killing.
Next time on Deliberations.
Eroticism hinges on a predatory instinct.
You can't have a lust killing without lust or killing.
Objection!
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and recorded from inside my apartment. I'm proud to say it launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, Jury, Macklin McGlahey, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau,
Adam L. Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. News and Courtroom, Allison Brown, Michael Cortez, Jonathan Seeger, Victoria Murray, Joe Cliff Thompson, and Jessica McKay. Check them out in our cast gallery at deliberationspod.com. Theme music by Mellow Knights. Some music in this season is sourced from incompetech.com. Huge thanks to all the fellow podcasters I met this week for their guidance. Podcasting, I'm learning, is its own special world of inclusion and kindness. Special thanks to fans of the show. I see you supporting what we're doing, and I'm exceptionally grateful. I really want to create a compelling experience for season two. You are enabling me to do that. Whether you're supporting our sponsor or rating and reviewing the show on iTunes, it is making a tremendous difference. I'm humbled by you all. Thank you.